Good morning. Okay, we will see if our slides turn up. Because earlier I was talking to Raymond, he said usually when we are rehearsing and we're trying things out, it comes up. Then after we do worship, for some reason the slides will have some problems appearing. So we will see what happens, okay? So we continue our series on the New Testament. And today we will be kind of focusing our attention on one of the gospel passages in Luke. And it's, I called it the bent back woman. And you might find it familiar. And so while Raymond is trying to figure out how to get the slides on, allow me to read to you the passage from Luke 13, verse 10 to 17. And if you have your Bibles with you, you can read along with me. So allow me to read it to you. So Luke 13, verse 10 to 17. It says, "Now he," meaning Jesus, "was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, 'Woman, you are set free from your ailment.' When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, 'There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day.' But the Lord answered him and said, 'You hypocrites, does not each one of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?' When he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing." Hallelujah. So I wonder if you can imagine what this woman was experiencing. We can probably imagine it in our minds, in theory, right? I mean, bent back, you know, difficult to walk. But this morning I wanted to try something slightly different. I wanted us to get a sense of what it must have felt like for her. And if you're willing and able, okay, please stand up and try this. You don't have to. If you're shy or if you prefer not to, you can stay seated. And don't judge your neighbor if they don't want to stand up, okay? It's perfectly fine. This invitation is purely for you. And if you feel like it might help you to imagine and understand better, you know, you could just stand up for a little bit. Don't worry, not for very long, just for a while, all right? I just want you to kind of experience it for yourself a little bit, okay? Lean over 45 degrees, if you can lean over so far. Okay, if you can't, never mind, just a little bit. If you can, and I want you to have a sense of the woman's predicament. For a few moments, just a few moments, I want you to feel the strain on your back, the burden on your shoulders that this woman felt for 18 long years. Can you feel that pull that makes you keep wanting to lift up your head to look at what's going on and yet feeling that resistance? I want you to look and see how being bent limits your vision. See how your perspective is shorter. You probably only see most of your feet and other people's feet. And stooping in this way, you cannot easily look into the faces of those around you. You can't be on the same level with anyone. You can't see the whole congregation easily. And it's also not easy to look toward the horizon to see a beautiful sunrise or sunset. So bent out of shape, we would not be able to gaze up at the full moon or the awesome stars at night. Okay, thank you. Please sit down. Thank you for standing up and trying it out. Okay. So how did that feel like for you? Got a little bit long after a while, a bit tiring, a bit like, oh, why is she making us do this? I understand. But thank you for being willing to just try. Because if it was hard, and a little bit uncomfortable, a little bit like, oh, why am I doing this? Can you imagine for this woman? She was bent over for 18 long years. And so that was the context that we were talking about. That's the story that we were talking about. So Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And there appeared a woman with a spirit that crippled her for 18 years. How many of us arrive on the Sabbath with spirits that have crippled us? This woman was bent and unable to stand up straight. She's not just a woman with a physical ailment, but the passage says she has a spirit that crippled her. So whatever it is that has her bent, whatever emotional, physical, or spiritual burden that she had borne, it ultimately became a part of her body until her body was conformed to its image. And I think each of us knows this infirmity intimately. Each Sunday, all sorts of burdens are carried into our church. Some, like the bent back woman's condition, are more visible than others. If we were to look around the room today, I wonder if you might be able to see the weight of suffering on someone's face, the crushing hurt and pain in another's eyes, broken relationships, the loss of a loved one, financial worries, poor health, people who are struggling. At some point, each of us have been bent with the burdens of our relationships, our jobs, our finances, our health, our own sense of lovelessness. We've all been this woman who is bent out of shape by her burdens. Well, this woman in Luke 13 knew what it felt like to be ignored or overlooked. I can quite imagine. Because in her time, for someone like that, often the community will think, there's something wrong with her. She must have done something wrong to deserve this. Sick for so long, she's exhausted, worn from despair. She's permanently bowed before all people. And in fact, the word for bent over is often used in the New Testament to speak of those who are disadvantaged. She is the lowest of the low, the least worthy of others' time or energy. Yet when she enters the synagogue, what happens? Jesus is teaching, he's speaking, and he sees her. The scriptural passage says he sees her. He doesn't just take a glance at her while skimming the crowd. He sees her. He sees her deeply enough to break from his teaching to address her. In the middle, imagine, you know, like he was preaching, and he sees her and he stops and he talks to her, he addresses her. How amazing is that? Jesus' first act of healing for this woman was not when he touched her. It was to treat her like a human being, worthy of dignity, as he gives her his time and attention. He treats her as one who is able. I don't know if you notice in the text that instead of Jesus walking over to her, and usually we kind of do that instinctively when we notice someone who is lesser able, we walk to them and we try to cover the distance. But Jesus calls her over in front of everyone. He says, come, come to me. He could have walked over to her quite easily. I think it would probably have been faster. It would probably have been easier. But Jesus chooses to call out to her and invites her to walk over to him. Because sometimes rather than having things done for them, people need to be empowered. And maybe this is what Jesus saw in her in that moment. Rather than needing help all the time, this woman needed empowerment. She needed to be shown the things she could do in her life rather than the things that she couldn't. And when she sees that, when she begins to feel that, her sense of pride and self-worth, her sense of being a valuable human being instead of a burden to society, probably comes rushing in with such a force that her body starts straightening up just a little. Then Jesus continues the healing. He lays his hand on her and sets her free from her infirmity. And she straightens up immediately, fully, completely. And we know that this is more than just mere physical healing, because she's filled with joy and begins praising God. Her spirit has been revived. She's no longer bent out of shape, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. There's a fullness to her restoration. There's a fullness to her restoration. And then what happens? The passage changes. It goes, but, right? It's a wonderful moment. She's praising God. She's been set free. But immediately, the synagogue leader pounces on the woman in this circumstance, right? She has come on the wrong day to be healed. She could come on any other day, 6 days in a week. Why the Sabbath? How dare she? Of course, that was also his snide way of rebuking Jesus, right? For healing on the Sabbath. But Jesus' response challenges the religious leaders on what the Sabbath is truly about. What is the Sabbath truly about? The synagogue leader had misconstrued the basic intention of observing the Sabbath. According to Deuteronomy, chapter 5, verse 12 to 15, the Sabbath, at its heart, offers a weekly reaffirmation of how much God values freedom and detests injustice. It says, observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you or your son or daughter, your male or female slave, or your ox or your donkey, or any of your livestock, or the resident alien in your towns, so that your male and female slave may rest as well as you. May rest as well as you. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. The original intention of the Sabbath, according to Deuteronomy, is to provide relief, even if only temporary, from any system that would deny a person or any part of creation a share of rest, peace, wholeness, dignity, and justice. The synagogue official says, why can't you just wait one more day? And Jesus' answer is, no. The Sabbath is exactly the day for setting people free. The Sabbath was exactly the day that God's intention to set people free. And in fact, the purpose behind the Sabbath, the value that God places over wholeness, necessitates that we do it now, right on the Sabbath. We can't wait. Does not each one of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water so that it will have life, right? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan had bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day? For Jesus, the grace and love of God always, always, always bends towards that which is life-giving rather than a set of laws. The grace and love of God bends always towards wholeness, dignity, and justice. And everyone there recognized it, because the moment Jesus said all that he did, his opponents themselves recognized it and they were put to shame. And the entire crowd recognized it because they rejoiced at all the wonderful things that he was doing. So today, perhaps you may have come here identifying with the bent back woman. Perhaps you felt overwhelmed by the burdens you've been carrying, and you need to be reminded that Jesus sees you. That Jesus sees you. And like the woman, he's calling you to walk over. Come. You see, there's a part that God plays, and there's a part that you play. God is reminding you that you are loved beyond measure, that God's strength and grace is sufficient for you. God desires to set you free. But sometimes, it doesn't feel like it's enough because we have work to do on ourselves too. We have our parts to play. How often do we add on to our own misery and suffering because we stubbornly hold on to mindsets and perspectives that are inaccurate or unhelpful? Recently, I read a poem that is attributed to Charlie Chaplin. It was said that he wrote it when he was about 70. But others say that this poem was derived from some writing by Kim Macmillan. But regardless of who is the original author, I think this poem contains profound wisdom for us even today. I just wanted to read it through with you. It said, "As I began to love myself, I found that anguish and emotional suffering are only warning signs that I was living against my own truth. Today I know this is authenticity. As I began to love myself, I understood how much it can offend somebody if I try to force my desires on this person, even though I knew the time was not right and the person was not ready for it, and even though this person was me. Today, I call this respect. As I began to love myself, I stopped craving for a different life that I could see, and I could see that everything that surrounded me was inviting me to grow. Today, I call this maturity. As I began to love myself, I understood that at any circumstance, I am in the right place at the right time. And everything happens at the exactly right moment, so I could be calm. Today, I call this self-confidence. As I began to love myself, I quit stealing my own time and I stopped designing huge projects for the future. Today, I only do what brings me joy and happiness, things I love to do and that make my heart cheer. And I do them in my own way and in my own rhythm. Today, I call this simplicity. As I began to love myself, I freed myself of anything that's no good for my health, food, people, things, situations, and everything that drew me down and away from myself. At first, I called this attitude a healthy egoism. Today, I know it is love of oneself. As I began to love myself, I quit trying to always be right, and ever since, I was wrong less of the time. Today, I discovered this is modesty. And as I began to love myself, I refused to go on living in the past and worrying about the future. Now, I only live for the moment where everything is happening. Today, I live each day, day by day, and I call it fulfillment. As I began to love myself, I recognized that my mind can disturb me and it can make me sick. But as I connected it to my heart, my mind became a valuable ally. And today I call this connection wisdom of the heart. We no longer need to fear arguments, confrontations, or any kind of problems with ourselves or others. Even stars collide, and out of their crashing, new worlds are born. Today I know. This is life. As I began to love myself. Do you know the inability to love and accept ourselves is often at the root of great suffering? It impedes our ability to hope and truly live. As we learn to love ourselves, we grow towards completing the equation of loving our neighbor as ourselves. We're learning both at the same time. So I have two questions for you today. How are you keeping yourself bent out of shape? And two, what role do you play in keeping others and God's creation bent out of shape? Remember the synagogue leader who was rebuking others because he was trying to protect the old order or what he thought was the right way of doing things? Sometimes we do the same without realizing it. We continue to live our lives unaware, without questioning why things are the way they are. There are systemic injustices all around us. Women and other minority groups have been constantly exploited for sex, power, or economic gain. And what's happening to our planet is alarming. The Amazon rainforest fires have become a global crisis, and perhaps you've seen news and videos about that. And we're feeling the effects of global warming and corporate greed all around the world. What can we do to stop bending others and creation out of shape? What can we do to lift up the dignity of another human being and the dignity of God's creation? I don't know about you, but I think sometimes we get overwhelmed. We get so overwhelmed by the problems of our world and the demands on our lives that we become paralyzed. How can one small person like me make a difference in the unjust systems of the world or the burning of the Amazon? How can one insignificant person like me make a difference in climate change or in restoring the dignity of those who are oppressed or overlooked? And then for some of us, when these things become overwhelming, these questions become overwhelming, we do nothing. We become paralyzed. And perhaps we should look to Jesus. Perhaps we can take a leaf from Jesus. Jesus made sure he stayed connected to God so that he would have the wisdom to know what to do and where to go. Jesus didn't heal every person that needed healing. He didn't preach the gospel to every single person. As far as we know, he didn't go to Europe or Africa. He stayed within a 300 kilometers radius most of his life. But he understood his calling, and he persevered in doing all the good he could to the point of laying down his life. As John Wesley said, do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. If you are feeling overwhelmed by the problems of the world and wondering what you can do, I wanted to share two short videos with you that demonstrate how various people have tried to lift the dignity of others in creation. And these are just two examples out of many. But I hope that they encourage and maybe inspire you to think of what you can do and what God is laying on your heart.